Brethren, the women put us to shame. And you look around the auditorium, and our ladies are back in the fellowship hall with Nicole. And it is always the case they outnumber us. And they put us to shame, and I'm thankful for our ladies and for the good work that they're doing. Nicole is going to do her job, and that is to provide those ladies a little bit of meat in their life, some things that they can do and that they do better than men. So my job tonight is to treat you like men. So I'm going to address you as men, meaning that I'm not going to pull my punches tonight. And so I hope and pray that this will be a lesson that will have great meaning in your life, because we are the leaders in the church, and we must, and God requires us to stand in the gap and to ensure that His church, and not just our homes, but His church is provided the type of character and work ethic and vision that He expects men to provide. And I'm going to do no less tonight than call all of us out to provide that very vision to reach the lost. So it was 2020, and I was my family was traveling the nation. COVID had hit, and we started up in January, and I can tell you that we were rolling, and we were getting two baptisms a day from the churches enrolled. We were praising God, and it was working. And we pulled into Linville Forest, North Carolina. And good-sized church, and they had gathered several churches together. We trained them. Something happened during that event that just I'll never forget. We offered the invitation on Sunday morning, and the preacher walks down the aisle. He gets about right here, and he just kneels down, and he weeps. The elders came out of the pew. They circled him, and after the invitation song had been sung, they announced that the preacher had something he wanted to say to the church. So I was listening very carefully, and he got up into the pulpit, and he owned it. He said, "Brethren, I have failed to evangelize. I have failed to lead this church in evangelism." And he says, I want to ask for your forgiveness. I want to ask for the forgiveness of God. And from this day forward, my mission, and this the mission of this church, is going to be to reach lost souls. His name's Kelly Brown. It was a turning point for that church. That congregation has been on fire ever since. I looked over at my wife. I said, "We're getting it. People are starting to realize this is the mission. And if you miss it, you're missing everything." We got in our car. We're in March of 2020. And we're heading back home. And I get a phone call from my sister. And she says, "Hey, Robbie," she says, "where are you at?" And I said, "Well, I'm on the highway. I'm trying to get home." She said, "Rob, don't you know we're in pandemic?" I said, "I did not know." I said, she said, "Haven't you been watching the news?" I said, "I try not to." And she said, "Rob, you got to turn the radio on right now. You got to turn the news on." She says, "I am at the Sam's right now in Murfreesboro. The line is wrapped around the store. I'm just trying to get meat, Rob." She said, "You got to get home. This is getting bad." And I said, "Well, Chrissy, what's going on?" And she tried to explain it. And then she said, "Rob, do you have any toilet paper?" I said, "Toilet paper?" I said, I looked at my wife. I said, "Honey, do I have any toilet paper?" She said, "We got a few rolls." And she said, "Rob, it's not enough." She said, "You got to get more. Get it all, Rob." She said, so I pulled into Tennessee. I literally pulled into the Dollar General. And my wife said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm going to buy toilet paper." And so I walked in the door, and I grabbed my buggy, and I went down the toilet paper aisle with my arm just like this. And I just took it all. I filled my buggy up. And I didn't even look at what it cost. I got to the register. That lady looked at me. She says, "Sir," she says, "what are you doing?" I said, "I'm buying toilet paper." I came out that night. My family took a picture of this. They made fun of me. And in any case, we got out, and I loaded it up. And I got in the car. My kids are laughing at me. My wife's laughing at me. Who's laughing now? And, we just used a last roll a few months ago. And we were prepared. I mean, we were prepared. And I got home. We're in the second week of March. And I get a call from the eldership of the Jacksonville Church of Christ. And the elder said, "Rob, we need you to come." And they said, we'd like you to sit in on this meeting. I drove into the parking lot. I had no idea. There's nothing that could have prepared me for what was about to happen. The elders looked at Alan Webster. They looked at me, and they said, "Hey, we don't know what to do." They said that the government says there's going to be bodies just piled in the streets. Millions of people are going to die. It's just going to spread all over the country. They said, you know, we don't know how to handle this. We sat there for hours and hours trying to come up with something, you know, as we went to the, I remember going to 1 Corinthians and looking at examples of, you know, national or crisis, epidemics and trying to find something in Scripture that would give me some guidance. And I looked at the elders and I said, brethren, whatever decision you make, I said, I'll support it. I said, but I think we need to keep worshiping God. And they said, well, we're going to do a hybrid. They gave me the plan. I said, okay. I went back home and I had to give my family news that I never thought I'd have to give. Never. I said, Nicole, Jared, and Hannah, I said, the elders are going to ask some of us to come up to the church and conduct a worship service, but they're going to request that most of us stay home. I said, you're not going to the congregation Sunday morning. In fact, I'm going, but you're going to stay home. And it didn't feel right. I can tell you, I felt this. I just felt inside like that's not the right thing to do. But I was doing what the elders asked me to do. We did this for a period of several weeks, and the elders we kept meeting. You know, different men would go up to the church, and we'd have a worship service, and some were meeting in their homes, and churches were struggling. My phone rang off the hook. People were trying to figure out, what do we do? I was sitting in my office, and I realized something. I was getting the report of 2 baptisms every single day up until the second week of March. Brother, when our country shut down and our churches closed their door, guess how many reports of baptisms I got from the second week of March to the end of May? Just guess. 0. I got not one report of a baptism. Brother, when the Church of Christ shuts their door, people are going to be lost. When we're not doing our job, people are not going to, they're not going to be taught. And I was sitting there, I was about in the beginning of May, and I thought to myself, I said, here we have people going to meet their God prematurely, and where is the Church of Christ? And I said to myself, you know, I can't live with myself like this. And so I got on the phone, and I looked, and at the first week of June, I'm supposed to be in Covington, Tennessee. The elder is Wayne Dalrymple. I called him. I said, Brother Wayne, I said, we're supposed to do some evangelism training first week of June. He said, Rob, we're not even open. I said, I'm coming. He said, Rob, did you hear me? He said, we're not open. I said, I'm coming. If I got to speak to an empty parking lot, I'm going to come. He says, I hear you, Rob. He says, you come and I'll get as many people there as I can. I pulled into a church of 350 people, filled that auditorium. They fumigated, they sanitized, they did everything they were supposed to do. And I got up there and we started training. From that day forward, we trained 32 churches. We came out here to West Texas. I pulled into Odessa and Midland. I can remember going into the Holiday Inn. And I got there, there was one receptionist. She gave me my room key and she said, don't worry, you're the only ones here. I went up to my room, I looked out of the parking lot was empty. I was the only one there. We went to Idaho. We trained. We went to Kansas. We trained. We went to Oklahoma. We trained. And we just kept training. The baptism started to come back. People started to report them again. We had 374 baptisms reported in 2020. We crisscrossed this nation. It was August, and I looked at my wife, anniversary's coming, and I said, honey, I said, I'm exhausted. I said, we've got to rest. And I said, we're supposed to be in St. Mary's, Georgia. I said, why don't we just show up a few days early? It's our anniversary, and let's rest. My family all said, yes, yes, Dad, let's rest. And she said, what do you want to do? I said, well, you know, I've always wanted to go deep sea fishing. I said, why don't we go deep sea fishing for our anniversary? And she said, that sounds like a good idea. What a wife, you know? And I said, yes. So I called the preacher. I said, hey, preacher, I said, I want to go deep sea fishing. I want to take just my family and relax. He says, man, he says, this is the deep sea fishing capital of the world, Rob. He says, man, everybody. He said, I know a captain. He's the best. You'll never get him. Except maybe now. Everything shut down. So I called him and he said, man, I'll take you deep sea fishing. He said, I haven't had a lot of customers. He said, but I'll take you. I said, okay. I said, sir, what time do you want me to be there? He said, how about 3:00? I said, sir, that doesn't give us a lot of time for fishing. He said, oh no, son, 3 in the morning. I said, 3 a.m. I said, Captain, how will I know it's you? He said, I'll be the only one there. And I said, okay. So we got out there about 3 o'clock in the morning. We pull our car in. We get in that. He's got his first mate in him. Man, this guy knows his trade. Man, he knows everything about fishing. He's got the gear. He's got, brother, I'm a pilot. I'm used to instrumentation, navigation. I have never seen a helm like this in my life. And I said, sir, what kind of instrumentation is this? He said, you do want to find the fish, don't you? I said, yes, sir. He said, what kind? I said, the big stuff. He said, son, you just go to sleep. He said, I'll wake you up when it's time. So my family, we went to sleep. I mean, it's dark outside. We're going out and out and out. Finally, the sun starts to pop up over the horizon. And as it pops up, I can see the gear. Everything has a place. This guy is completely prepared for what's coming. He says, all right, everybody. He throttles it back. He says, we're going to get our bait fish. So we put our poles in the water. Literally, he counted down. He looks at his instrumentation. He says, 10, 9, 8. We all have our poles in the water. He said, pull them up. We pull them up, and every one of our poles was covered in bait fish. I said, sir, how did you do this? He said, son, it's all I do. He said, this is my trade. I said, that's amazing. And so, again, he said, all right. He said, if you want big stuff, we got another hour. And so, once again, he throttles it down. We sit down, and man, my heart's racing. You know, I'm looking. I can't see land anywhere. I'm in the Atlantic. And so, once again, he throttles it back. He said, all right, which one of you are going to be first? And I said, sir, I'll go first. He looks at his first mate and said, buckle him in. But I've never been buckled in before to fish. And he brought out a fishing pole about the size of my arm. And he puts it out there, and we throw it all out there. And now he's watching all these instruments, and all of a sudden he says, his first mate, about 5 o'clock, about 100 yards. Brother, it wasn't 10 seconds later, my pole just went zzzz. He said, now I'm holding it. That first mate he's just right there with me. He said, all right, son, you're gonna set the hook. I set the hook, and there I started. Brother, it took a lot of time. That fish is way out there, and I'm trying to bring it in. And he said, no, don't fight it. Don't fight it, son. He said, it's going to come in. And I got the video camera, my wife's videoing this. This is a big moment, you know. And it's finally, it comes out of the water. I said, Captain, what is that? He says, it's a kingfish. He says, son, there's a reason they call that a kingfish. I'm about to pull it in the boat, and out of the left corner of my eye, something sails out of the water. It slices my fish in half. I said, Captain, what happened to my fish? He said, well, son, that's called a barracuda. And there's a reason we call him a barracuda. Listen to me. Church, by 2 o'clock that afternoon, we're done. We are finished. We had all caught our limit. And we're going in. Brother, that man knew his trade. There was anything about fishing that man didn't know. He had sacrificed his life to be the best fisherman a man could be. He didn't complain when he had to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning. He didn't complain when he had to spend money on those big, all that nice equipment. But he read every magazine. He was an expert in his field. I fear tonight. We got men sitting in our pews. We got men who are experts when it comes to getting the big buck. You spare no expense. You'll spend whatever it takes to get your lease. You'll spend whatever it takes to get your rifle. You don't complain when you got to get up there at 3 o'clock in the morning and it's freezing outside. No one complains because you love it. You study it. Brother, we not only have the cameras, we got the Wi-Fi cameras. That buck doesn't have a chance. We know what time it comes. We feed it. We got everything prepared. We study it. I think they're men right now. You're more motivated. We're more prepared to go get the catfish and the big buck than we are to go fishing for men. And we ought to be ashamed of ourselves. Brother, we are more passionate about trying to get out there and catch a catfish or get a trophy buck when our neighbors and our friends and our family are lost. And until that changes among the men of the church, our congregations are not going to change course. This church will not change course until the men stand up and do their job. Brethren, we need you to know your trade. You got to find out, how can I reach the lost? We got to train our men. We got to focus on it. And I learned something from that captain. I watched him. That first mate, on every word that captain said, he hung on it. He never questioned it. He was the best. There's never been a better fisherman in the world than Jesus. And we do well to follow his example. We do well to learn how he did what he did. And I've tried this week to give you just some principles that Jesus exemplified in his life. But if we don't put this together in a plan, if we don't have some organizational structure, this is going to fall apart. There isn't a business success. There's anything, no sports team, no military unit out there that succeeds without there being some type of plan put together where people can be unified with purpose and mission. I'm going to share that with you. It's said to be one of the greatest speeches in world history. And Winston Churchill gave it. And Winston Churchill was looking at a nation of failure, a nation in decline, a nation that had given up hope, a nation that was watching Adolf Hitler ravage the European theater, and they were next. In fact, their own prime minister was ready to give it up. He was ready to sign another peace treaty. He'd already been burned once. Winston Churchill walks into the Commons, and this is one of the things he said. He who fails to plan is planning to fail. My fellow countrymen, we have no plan, and we're going to lose this war. It is said that that speech he gave was a contributing factor to turning the tide. The British people immediately made him prime minister. Brother, I'm going to ask you a question tonight. Where is your plan? What's our plan to reach the lost? What's our plan to reach the people in our community? What's our plan to reach our neighbors? Are we just shooting? Are we just shooting from the hip, hoping we hit something? I mean, we need to have an organized plan. So what I want to do is give you a 10,000-foot view of what a plan looks like. Would you not agree tonight that the Church of Christ should be an army of soul winners? Brother, we are not wrestling against flesh and blood. This isn't about a sovereign battle on earth. This is a battle for the souls of people. We are the army of God. And the army of God must engage and we must prepare. Here's what I'm finding. In most of our churches, we are ill-equipped. We have no equipment, very little, and we're not trained. So if we have the equipment, our members don't know what to do. But in most churches, we lack both. So what do I do? Number one, we get the equipment. I don't know why it is that we feel like we have to... We'll send Bibles all over the world. We're spending thousands of dollars sending Bibles to Jamaica and India and Tanzania. Brethren, do you realize in your neighborhood right now, there's a lot of people that don't have a Bible? They need Bibles. We need Bibles for the people that live next door. And we need tools to teach them the Bible. And we've got to apply it. We've got to supply that. I tell you, I want to commend your elders here. Can I walk into this church building? This is a rarity. I rarely see a church prepared for war. I rarely see a church equipping their people with tools. Most of the time I walk into a church, I couldn't find a Bible study. Brethren, if you sent me on the hunt and made me the leader of the pack, it wouldn't be there. I could go through filing cases. It's not there. Let me tell you a true story. I walked into a church. I was an hour early. The elders greeted me. I said, gentlemen, I said, could we role play? And they said, Rob, go ahead. I said, I'm a member. I said, I want to do a Bible study. I said, can you equip me? And he looked at me and said, oh, Rob, we knew you were coming. They said, follow me. Well, I walked down the hallway. We turned on every light. And we're going to the end. He pulls out his keys because it's locked, of course. We go through the ring of keys. We get in the room. He said, Rob, they're somewhere here. And someone said, oh, they're back in that cabinet. We walk back to this cabinet. Of course, it was locked. We finally got the keys out, unlocked the cabinet, and he pulls out a stack of Back to the Bible. He said, preacher, we're prepared. We've got Back to the Bible. This was my question. I said, brother, I want to know why the tools that your members need to teach the lost are locked in a room and locked in a locker. And you know what he told me? He said, well, Rob, we were afraid someone might get them. Isn't that the point? Don't we want them to get them? Why are we locking away the tools? Brother, I commend you because you've got tools. You have placed them out where the people can get them. I've never found a church that's not prepared for the coffee. I don't know about you, Mike, but every church I've ever been to, we got coffee pots, we've got coffee grinds, we've got coffee stirrers, we got coffee cups, we've got coffee creamer, we got coffee pots, coffee filters, we got everything we need for our coffee. And when it comes to our teachers, we got laminators, we got scissors and safety scissors, we've got glue sticks, and we've got cardboard and colored paper and die cut machines and copy machines, and we've got everything we need to open up a teacher supply room. Brethren, where are the tools to teach the lost? I want to submit to you that if you went to your job and you didn't have the equipment to do your job, you will not succeed. There are tools that you need to do your job, and they supply them to you. And they make sure you have those tools. Carpenters have tools. Electricians have tools. Mechanics have tools. Where are the tools? We need them. And we got to make sure not only that, they're out there where people can get them. You've done that. I'm excited because most churches don't do what you've done. I want to propose that maybe you consider getting a table. And let's call this our evangelism center. And let's make it the focal point of our church. Let's get a nice tablecloth. Let's put specific, not just, we can fill it with tracks, and that's not what I'm talking about, but specific tools that are going to be needed to accomplish a congregational mission. Specific things. So let's place them on a table, and let's make it the centerpiece, and let's draw attention to it. Let's make sure the members know it's there. Let's not let them escape without understanding that that table's for them. That those tools are there for to take home, to use, to help them reach the lost. Let's make sure that they understand that those tools are being provided so that they can reach neighbor and friend and coworker. I call that the evangelism table. It's very important. I'm not going to spend more time on this. I think you guys have, you're already on the path. I see some good things already. But if you're visiting tonight, number one, your church doesn't have the tools, you need to start right there. Number two, if they've not placed them out where people can get them, you need to go and make sure that happens. Number three, let's just keep going. We've got to train them how to use them. And this is where a lot of our churches just fall right off the cliff. So we get all the tools, but our members do not know how to use them. Our preachers do. A select few members do. But the average church member has no idea how to use those tools. I would submit to you that not, if you were to pass these tools out and spend time from the pulpit on a Sunday teaching the church how to use the tools, it might just be the case that your members would use them. Think about it. You got Cliff Goodwin's a good friend of mine, and he said, "Rob, come train us." And he does preaching the gospel. Cliff is an incredible preacher. So I went there, and we went through the training. Cliff said, "We're going to start training the church immediately, Rob, how to use some of these tools." So they pass them out, and they spend weeks, months training the church from the pulpit. Not on Monday night. You're going to lose 90% of your church. Do it on Sunday morning. A few months later, I called Cliff. I said, "You guys are having a lot of baptisms." He said, "We are." I said, I knew it'd work well. "Cliff, you're a talented preacher." He said, "Rob, I'm not doing them." I said, "Who is?" He said, "The widows." He said, "We taught the ladies." Some of those widows said, "Well, you know, I've got a friend over here and I could teach them. I can use those little booklets. My daughter, Kinley. Rob, she's brought three to Christ. Three. She taught one of her coworkers at the Cracker Barrel." He said, "Rob, the members are doing more studies and baptisms than I am." Brethren, if that ever happens, you know you're in the right place. When the members of a church pick up the mantle and they start evangelizing, preacher, stay, never leave. Because that's a church right there that gets it. But it won't happen if you don't train them. You went to preaching school, Mike Bonner. You study this every day. You devote yourself. Your average member doesn't. And so you're going to have to help them know how to do things. You're going to have to spend time training. I cannot emphasize enough that if you do not properly train members how to use tools, those tools are worthless. They will not use them. And so as we are progressing through this evangelism plan, we're going to ask you to do the same thing that your job does. When they say, okay, we need you to use a D9 bulldozer. That's a pretty stout piece of equipment. You think they're going to spend time training you how to use it before they put you in the seat? You think they're going to, how about this? We just want you to use a motorized pallet jack. You think they're just going to hand it over and say, go for it? Are they going to spend some time teaching you how to use the electrified pallet jack? Brother, I was a bag boy at Albertsons and they gave me a day of training. They wouldn't even let me put milk in the bag until I watched videos and I had some training to do it. Man, I want some honesty tonight. How many of us have ever been through some training at our churches to teach us how to greet a visitor? How to approach a new mover? How to use a tool like Believe the Bible? How to use Back to the Bible? How to use a Does It Matter? How to use a Jewel Miller? There are so many good tools, and what I'm finding is that a lot of our church members would love to use them if they knew how to do it. You're going to have to spend time in your church training the membership. This is not about your elders. This is not about your preachers. This is about your members. Your members will be edified. They'll grow. They'll be strengthened. I mean, it's amazing. I can't tell you how many preachers will call me and say, Rob, for the last six, eight weeks, we took our church through Back to the Bible from the pulpit Sunday morning. I preached through it. I handed it out to every single member. Rob, we've had three baptisms from the pews. We actually had people sitting in our pews who were lost. They didn't know it until they did the Bible study. I can't tell you how many times that happens. People that sit in the, they don't, you might be surprised tonight how many people sit in your pews and you think they're Christians, but maybe they're not. And a Bible study forces you to come, you know, face to face with Scripture. It's going to ask you specific questions about what you did. We have to train our people. Number four, we've got to promote an atmosphere of evangelism among our congregation. We've got to turn our church into an evangelistic body, a machine, where everything focuses on evangelism. And so if you're going to have a culture in your church that's evangelistic, it's going to be intentional. It's going to be because you have made sure that every activity, every benevolent work you do, every community work you do, every congregational activity you have, everything you do focuses on the laws. I want to give you an example. So we were getting ready to go to Carnes in Knoxville, and the elders had said, hey, Rob, they said, we think when you come, we would like to add a backpack drive. We think that would be a good evangelistic tool. I said, I think it is. They said, we've got a deacon. We've appointed him to be over this backpack drive. When you get here, would you sit down perhaps and offer some pointers? I said, I'll be glad to. So I got to Carnes and I met this deacon. He said, man, Brother Whitaker, he said, we're so excited. He said, man, we've got this backpack. Brother Whitaker, you got to see this. So he takes me to this room. He opens it up. Brother, they got more backpacks at the Carnes Church of Christ than all the Walmarts in Knoxville. They are loaded. I've never seen so many crayons in my life. And he said, Rob, that's all from the members. I said, these are generous people. He said, Rob, we're going to pass out 400 backpacks on Saturday morning. They had the orange cones and the rope. They were ready. They had the tape. They had it all. He said, Rob, what do you think about our plan? I said, brother, I said, man, I can't tell you how excited I am for the opportunity you guys have to reach lost souls. But if it was me, I would put your backpacks in the Bible classes. I'd have the teachers in the classrooms, and I would make sure that your members were in the foyer. And when people walked into the church building to get the backpack, that you would give them a tour, like an open house of your church building. You would take them to the Bible class where your teachers would be, that their children would attend, introduce them to the teacher, give them the backpack. Didn't your ladies have a fellowship meal, a meal provided in the fellowship hall, sit down and eat with them, and then escort them out to the car? He looked at me and he said, Rob, we can't pass out 400 backpacks like that. That very night, we had a Bible study. No, you may not pass out 400 backpacks, brethren, but I guarantee you're going to make contact with people. Right, it's all about the people. You got to get to know. You can't just toss backpacks into the back of the trunk of a car and expect somehow people are going to be saved. It's a culture that you create in the church where things become, everything's about, your backpack drive is about evangelism. Your graduation banquet's about evangelism. Who comes to graduation banquets? Teachers, parents, family. They're not all members of the church. In fact, here's what I would suggest. When you got a graduation banquet, you look at those young people. Say, I want you to invite every teacher. I want you to invite every neighbor. I want you to invite anybody that you are close to. And you invite them. And your preacher's going to be ready. And that church has got to be ready. Because you've got a bunch of people coming into the building who are not members of the church. Everything you do is about reaching the lost. Vacation Bible School becomes a reaching the lost activity. It's not about the Sundays and cookies, brethren. It's about the people that come that are lost. We started doing that at Willette, and it changed everything. I tell you what, I remember the first time I suggested to the elders that we make VBS an evangelistic event. I was sitting with my elders. I said, brethren, I just want you to know something this year. I'm not going to dress up like a cowboy. And I'm not going to dress up like a clown. And I said, I'm not going to hoop and holler down the aisle. And they said, what do you mean? That's what the kids like. I said, well, I said, what I want to do is I want to look for people that are not Christians, and I want to try to reach out to them. And I said, I'll still teach my lesson, but if you want somebody else to do that, that's fine, but that's not what I'm doing. And they said, okay. So I sat myself right about where you're sitting, brother. My wife sat there, and right behind me, this lady, she's got to be in her 70s. I turned around. I said, ma'am, are you visiting? She said, yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. My name's Phyllis. And she talked to, she talked a high-pitched voice. I said, Miss Phyllis, I said, why are you here? Oh, my granddaughter, they need to go to church. Brethren, when we did a VBS at Willette, we filled the church building. I mean, kids are everywhere. She pointed them out. I said, I'm so glad you brought your children. I said, y'all go to church? No, not normally, but they need to go to VBS. I told them they had no choice, they're going. And I said, well, every day, I ate with her. I got to know her. And we're sitting there, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, And at the end of the week, I said, Miss Phyllis, I said, could I get your contact information? Well, sure. So I got her. I said, would it be okay if I just came out and said hello? Yeah, you be careful, though, now. My husband, he don't like people. And I said, it's okay. I said, I'll be real careful. So my wife, she didn't go with me. And Phyllis scared her away. And I just went by myself. And I went over to the house, and I knocked on the door. She opens it up, and there was more smoke than oxygen that came out of that house. And I looked at her. Oh, hey, preacher. I said, hey, Phyllis. Good. I said, I just want to come by and thank you for coming to VBS. How are your grandchildren? Oh, good. I said, what do you think about bringing them to Bible class? Well, I was thinking about that. She said, I think I need it. I said, was your husband inside? I'd like to meet him. Oh, he don't like you. I said, I've never met him. He'll cuss you if you come in. I said, well, I don't want to be cussed. I said, it's okay. I said, I don't have to come in. It wasn't a month later I started studying with her. We baptized her. Her husband had a heart attack about 5 years later. It's amazing how quickly people change. I walked into his room. I said, Mr. Woodard. I said, my name's Rob. I know who you are, sir. I said, I just wanted to know the church is praying for you. He said, I've never got so many cards in my life. He said, why are you guys sending me cards? I said, we love you. And so we've been praying for you. And we brought food by. And we helped clean his place up. How hard do you think it's going to get to be a Bible study now? Not very hard. And we baptized him. We made VBS evangelistic. Brother, I'm trying to give you a 10,000-foot view here of what this looks like. Whatever you do at your local church has got to be about reaching the lost. It doesn't matter what it is. You got to find a way to put a funnel in it and says, we're going to reach the lost. And the good news is you can make any activity almost evangelistic if you just think it through. How can I reach the community? What about trunk or treat? Do people come to trunk or treat that are not Christians? When a Reese's peanut butter cup costs $5, they're coming. I'm telling you, they're going to fill the parking lot. And I don't know if you've ever done this, starting to line your trunk, your cars up, and hey, come get candy. And all the members have candy. People come. My wife one day said, Rob, we need to get those people in the church building. And I said, well, how are we going to do that? She said, why don't we have a soup contest? I said, I like that. So we advertised in house to house, heart to heart on the back page. Come to our trunk or treat for a soup contest. Brethren, you ought to have seen the people bring their soups. Guess who got to be the judge? Boy, that was good. And it has lots of soups. And we had a bunch of judges. Guess what happens when you put people in a fellowship hall and you sit next to them and talk to them? Guess what happens? You make contacts. And then you develop the contact. And you have Bible studies from the contact. So it doesn't matter what it is. We create an evangelistic atmosphere. I can spend a lot of time here, but let me keep going. Is this not what most of our churches are doing? We got vouchers and teacher supply giveaways and backpack drives and winter coat drives and turkey giveaways and blessing boxes. But at the end of the day, I don't know how many churches are represented, but in your benevolent work, at the end of the year, if you took inventory, how many souls were saved? How many? At Willett, zero. That building on the top left is ours. $100,000 is spent to build it. And we became the local, donation center. Once a week, we would open that thing up. 100 people a week went through that, getting stuff. And there wasn't one Bible study set up. That's because what we did is separate evangelism from benevolence, and the two never meet. Brethren, the work of the church is to save souls. We do that in evangelism, benevolence, and edification. The mission doesn't change, Mike. It's the same mission. May I submit to you this evening that Jesus did not come to solve world poverty. It's not going to happen. This is not heaven. In an ideal world, if everybody was a Christian, we'd solve it right now. We know that's not going to happen. So what did Jesus come to do? He came to be kind and compassionate and yes, feed the 5,000, feed the 4,000. Yes, his miracles and he cared for people. But why is all that being done? Because brethren, if we can show compassion to people, we can reach their hearts. We've got to understand benevolence is a tool to bring people to the cross. It's not so that we can solve poverty in San Angelo, Texas. You're not going to do it. I think we should help people, but never forget the mission. Her name's Kim. She called the building. Jacksonville. She said, hey, I got this little publication, House to House, and it says you guys offer free community services. Listen to my lingo. I didn't say benevolence, did I? You know why I don't use the word benevolence? Anybody know? Because that's a lingo we understand. That's not lingo the community. They don't understand that language. All right, you're looking at a group of people out here that when you say benevolent, what? But if you say free community services, they're on board. And so I use the language they understand. Well, we're getting phone calls now, right? Hey, what community service do you offer? Kim wanted to know. And we said, well, Kim, what is it you need? She said, well, I could use a little food. I said, we can do that. She said, well, wonderful. She said, well, how do I get it? I said, Sunday morning at 9:30, and we can't wait to meet you. Oh, I can't make it Sunday morning at 9:30. I said, no problem. We do it again at 10:30. Oh, well, I just don't know if I can do that. I said, Kim, we do it at 6 o'clock on Sunday night. Well, Sundays are just not good for me. No problem. We do it at Wednesday at 7 o'clock, and we can't wait to meet you. Well, Wednesdays just are not good for me. I said, Kim, is there any day that would work? Well, to be honest, I just don't have a car. I said, not a problem. I said, we'll pick you up. May I suggest that we do our benevolence at our church buildings? Let's get them here. And Kim finally said, well, yeah, you can pick me up. So our secretary, the secretary of that church, went and picked her up, brought her in. We sat with Kim the whole service. I looked at Kim. I said, Kim, could we take you out to eat? Well, that'd be awful nice of y'all. We took her out to eat. And that discussion, I said, now, Kim, what is it that you kind of wanted and needed? And she said, I need some food. I said, well, let's go get some food. We got the food. We walked into her apartment. Her apartment is mold infested. And I said, Kim, have you been sick since you've moved here? She says, yes, I have this cold. It won't go away. I said, Kim, you got mold. I said, we need to help you. You need help. I don't know what to do. I said, well, let's call the manager. I called and they inspected. They got a huge mold problem. And they said, well, there's a property across town that we've just built and we'll give you that one of those rooms. Kim looks at me and she says, Rob, I can't move. I don't have the ability. I said, no worries. So the men of the church showed up. We loaded up her stuff. We moved her across town. I'm sitting in her living room. My wife's on the other side. Now I'm going to ask my three questions. Are you ready? Kim, I said, I want to know something. What do you think about the Jacksonville Church of Christ? And she said, man, I love it. She said, y'all are the nicest people I've ever met. You've gone out of your way to help me. I said, Kim, do you know a lot about the Jacksonville Church of Christ? She says, not a lot, not really. I said, Kim, would you like to know a little bit more about it? She says, you know, I kind of would. I said, good, because I just so happen to have these little booklets. What do you think happened when Kim finished with the booklets? Brethren, this happened 17 times. 17 times we did this. And every time we baptized them. We became intentional with our benevolence. We're no longer going to just hand out food to hand out food. Brethren, I'll help you with your food. But I've got something else I think you need. And I'm going to do a Bible study. Let me go to number 5. This is very important. Brethren, of all the things I'm going to talk about tonight, I'd say just put it in park right here. Because if you don't get this, you don't have anything. You're not going anywhere in evangelism. You need people. You've got to have a lot of them. I want to talk a little bit about how you can create contacts in your community. First thing you need to do is advertise the presence. You've got a nice sign out there. But I'm telling you, there are a lot of people here in San Angelo that don't know you're here. And if they don't know you're here, they're not coming. Wherever it is you're from, Big Spring, wherever you're from, they've got to know you're here. If advertising didn't work, believe you me, Walmart wouldn't do it. They do it because they know it works. And I can tell you, we've got to advertise the presence of a church. We've got to make sure the people out here know we're here. And so we send, and we keep sending, and we remind them every month, every other month, we're here. Come and visit this church. Here's our time of services. Here's where we're located. One of the biggest problems we have with this tool right here is that members don't know how to use it. Let me give you an example. I'm going to go to your website on that magazine. I'm going to check it out. Do you know how many times the website works? About half. Do you know how many times it's accurate? Less than that. What about the phone number? I mean, if I were to pick up the phone and call that phone number, where does it ring? What phone does it ring? It should ring a human being. Because I guarantee in the secular world, if a business is advertising their services, you're going to get somebody that can take your order. But in the church, here's what normally happens, because I test this. I call and I get an answering service. And let's say somebody was looking for a church for their family and they get an answering service or no one's there to pick it up. How many times do you think they're going to call? How many chances are you going to get before they just go to the next church? There are things about this magazine that I've learned through the years that make it very effective. One is that phone number ought to ring an elder or a preacher. It ought to ring a human being. Because when they call and reach out, I want them talking to me. I want to know who they are. I don't want them talking to an answering service or an empty office. I looked over my left shoulder, and there they sat. Her name is Ellen. Alan Webster finished the sermon. He walked back, and I looked at her. I said, Alan, who is that woman right there? And he said, Rob, that's a visitor. I'd been gone 3 weeks. I didn't know. And I said, I'm going to move on in. So right before the closing song, I moved in right behind her. And I'm sitting right after the prayer, she turns around. And I looked. I said, ma'am, are you visiting this morning? She says, I am. I said, well, my name's Rob. I'm one of the members. My name's Ellen. I said, Ellen, where are you from? Well, just down the road. I said, are you with somebody? Well, I was with my husband, but he got sick and I had to take him home. But, you know, I'm glad I stayed. And I said, well, did you like the service? She said, yes. I said, what'd you like? She said, I liked the preaching. She said, that preacher of yours sure does love the Bible. I said, yes. I said, Alan loves the Bible. And I said, well, Miss Ellen, I said, we'd love to get to know you. She said, well, you know what? She said, do you got an evening service? I said, I do. We 6 o'clock. And she said, I'm going to bring him. I want him to meet y'all. I said, we'll save a seat for you. She said, we'll sit right here. She brings her husband back. We sit down in the pew with her. We're just members, right? Just members. Nobody special. We just talked. And I found out a little bit more about him. after service. I said, Perry, we have a custom here at this church. He said, what is it? I said, we always invite visitors to go out to eat. I said, what's your favorite restaurant in Jacksonville? He said, well, I love Athena's. Athena's, wow. I said, okay. I said, all right, Athena's it is. I said, can I take you to Athena? He said, you take me to Athena's? I said, why not? And he said, man, I don't want to miss out on that. He said, my stomach's hurting me. Can we do it Tuesday night? I said, absolutely. So we set the appointment. 6 o'clock. I made reservations. They show up at Athena's. I have one mission with Perry and Ellen. And I'm very focused. We walked in. We sat down around the table. I said, Perry, what do you like to do? I want him to tell me. I want him to do all the talking. And I said, what do you like? He said, well, he said, I like sports. I said, well, I do too. You like NFL? He said, no, I don't watch that anymore. I said, me neither. I said, Perry, you like NBA? Nah. I said, well, baseball? A little slow. Golf? Nah. I said, well, Perry, what is he like? He said, man, Rob. He said, go Alabama. Oh, no. Go Alabama. Brethren, if I've got to like Alabama football to get a Bible study, so be it. I don't care. And I said, man, Alabama's a great team, Perry. I said, man, you got Nick Saban, and we're starting, you know, he really's talking now. I mean, he gave me every stat there was about Alabama football. There's nothing he left off the, nothing he left out. I have one mission. It's all I want, one thing. And I looked at him, and I said, Perry, I said, tomorrow is the national championship game of college football. He said, yes. I said, I'm so sorry Alabama didn't make it. I know, Rob, it's terrible. And I said, but are you going to watch it? He said, of course. I said, we're having a football party at my house. What was that? That was my wife kicking me. She did not know about this party. And so I said, we're having a party and we want you to come. And he said, honey, would you like to go to the Whitakers for the football party? And she said, sure, we'll go to your house. My wife looked at me. She says, who's cooking for this party? That was on the way home. And I said, honey, I've got it covered. We'll be okay. She knows I need him in the house. I have one thing I want, Mike. And we sat there and watched that first half. It was a blowout. After the first half, I looked over at him. And I said, Perry, I said, why'd you come to the Jacksonville Church of Christ? Listen to his words. 21 years ago, Rob, you guys started sending out house to house, heart to heart. We go to church. He said, I love house to house because you guys always talk about the Bible. Rob, our church doesn't follow the Bible anymore. We don't believe in marriage. Rob, I got to tell you what our church is doing right now. I mean, you could tell it was hurting him. And I said, Perry, do you know a lot about the Jacksonville Church of Christ? He says, not a lot. I said, would you like to know more about us? He said, we kind of would. I said, I just so happen to have these little booklets. It's not hard. You have to make a contact, show them you care, and plant a seed. A farmer does it every year. They take the soil, they till the soil, they plant the seed, and God gives the increase. He's very good. What would have happened if we didn't advertise our presence? They're not coming. If they don't know you're there, they're not coming. You've got to use every tool at your disposal. Whether it's the radio, and you guys have a great radio program. Whether or not it's a flyer or a magazine being sent out. But they've got to know you're here. Because when that moment in their life arises, you want them to think 9th and Main, Big Spring, wherever it is you are, you want them to think, that's the church I'm going to attend. You advertise your events on the back. We advertised our trick or trunk. We advertised our backpack drive. We advertised our fish fry. We advertised our whatever it is, our soup contest. We advertise. We want to get the community into the church building. Advertise. Give things away. Give tracts away. Give DVDs away. Give videos away. Give books away. What's going to happen when someone writes and says, hey, I'd like that material on marriage? Hello? Yes, Deb? She's our secretary. Rob, we've got a lady. Her name's Brenda, and she wants some marriage material. Rob, we've always mailed it, but the elders told me that I wasn't allowed to mail it anymore, and I'm supposed to call you. Rob, what are we doing? And I said, we're going to deliver it by hand. We've never done that before. I said, that's why we don't baptize them. And I said, we've got to go hand deliver it. We've got to go meet the people. And so I said, give me the address, Deb. And I said, Nicole and I will take it from here. She gives me the address. I take the mirror because she's requested this material in house to house. So I go to the house. I'm not with my wife. I kind of get out of the way. She sees Nicole. She opens the door. Hello? Ma'am, my name's Rob. My wife, Nicole. You Brenda? Yeah, yes, sir. I said, we're from house to house and you wanted some marriage material? Yes, I requested that. I said, ma'am, may I ask, have you just got married? I did, about a month ago. I said, well, here's the material. It's some good Bible literature on marriage. Well, I'm so glad you came. She says, I'm kind of new here. I don't know a lot of people. And I said, well, I said, you need some help maybe finding some places? Well, you know, I may need a little help. And we're just talking, right? And just getting to know her. Things are going really well. And then suddenly she stops. And she said, sir, she says, that you got a church home? Isn't that supposed to be what I ask? She asked me. And I said, yes, ma'am, I do. I said, right across from the college down there is a Jacksonville. Oh. She said, sir, my husband's Daniel. I said, yes, ma'am. She said, sir, I got a problem. She says, my husband knows nothing about the Bible. Nothing. And I looked. I said, what do you mean nothing? She said, he don't know. He says, someone's got to teach this man. Then she asked me, would you help me? Brother, I could not believe the conversation I was having at the door. I said, ma'am, I said, I'd be glad. She said, good. Then she hollers, Daniel, I don't know what that man does all day at work. He goes to bed every time he gets home. Daniel, get up. There are visitors here. She wakes him up. I can see this man's 6'4". He comes to the door. He's looking at me. This is exactly how she did. She says, sir, she says, Daniel, she said, we're going to teach you the Bible. I looked at her. And I said, ma'am, I said, when would you like to start? She said, what about tomorrow? I said, my wife will bring the chocolate chip cookies. 7 baptisms. 7. We baptized Brenda. We baptized Daniel. We baptized Winford. We baptized Geneva. We just kept baptizing. What would have happened if I mailed it? What if I just mailed the material? What do you think would have happened? Nothing. Brethren, I can't emphasize this enough. You cannot buy yourself into evangelistic success. You got to meet people. You got to be personal. You got to go to their door. You got to introduce yourself. You got to be human. People respond to people. You can't just sit back and hope they come. By the way, have you not noticed? Build it and they will come. Only works in the movies. They're not coming, brethren. You got to go to them. Every now and then someone comes. But for the most part, if we don't go meet them, we're not going to be successful. You got to make a target list. What if we ask everyone in this auditorium right now, give me an address of your friends, your family, your coworkers. Just write it down and give it to us. And you sent that to house. We would send house to house to them every single issue. It's called the target list. Not only are we going to cover an area, we're going to cover individual people that you work with. Do you know what that allows you to do? That allows you to look over at your buddy you've been working with and say, hey, I subscribed to a magazine for you a couple months ago. It's called House to House. Have you been getting it? It's a conversation starter. Again, so you just keep building over and over. Let me talk about this. What about door knocking? People say, well, you know, door knocking doesn't work. Brethren, we have a 30% success rate door knocking in our school. I wish I had time right now to talk about the ins and the outs, but I'm just going to leave it here. If you'll train your people how to knock doors, it'll work. But if you send them out and say, hey, go invite them to the gospel meeting. How many of you have done that? How many of you have taken a gospel meeting flyer and invited people to? Just raise your hand. Okay, put your hands down. How many people came? It's usually 0, 2. It's a lot of work, and you get really low results. What if we reimagined door knocking into something a little different? What if we decided maybe that's not the most successful way to do it? Maybe there's another way to do it. I want to share with you 5 ways that we knock doors. 5 ways, and I'm going to do that. And you're going to get that training. I can't do it all tonight, but I'm going to do 5 things you can do at the door. And we average a 30% success rate at the door doing these 5 things. And one of them is not inviting them to your gospel meeting. I'm not opposed to that. In fact, I think you should have gospel meetings. I think you should invite people. But I'm just suggesting that maybe cold turkey showing up at the door and saying, come to our gospel meeting, may not be the most successful way to do it. They don't know who you are. Why would they trust you? There are other ways to do that. So we're going to work on door knocking. We're going to work on this. New movers. So David Shannon said several years ago at Polishing the Pulpit. Let me just quote him real quick. People are most likely to change churches when they move. I was sitting in the audience when he said it. He said, a couple of generations ago, if a couple or a family or an individual moved from one area to another area, they usually stayed in that same denomination. He said, those days are over. He said, it doesn't matter to me what denomination they were in the last town. I really don't care. The average person today is willing to look at any church in their neighborhood. So it doesn't matter if they were Baptist, Methodist, it doesn't matter anymore. They just want to go to a church, Brian. They just want to go somewhere. This is a powerful opportunity for evangelism. It doesn't matter to me what church you were part of in the last town. I want you to visit a church of Christ because that gives you the best opportunity to sit down and study the Word of God. Jeff Archie sent me something just yesterday. And he said, Rob, Lifeway. Y'all know what Lifeway is? It's a major religious bookstore. It's major. And they said, they commissioned a study. I thought you'd like to see it. And I read it. It was the top five things the churches are doing to get people to come. Number one was new mover. That was the number one thing they recorded in their data. We have witnessed personally that there is not a more receptive group in your community than people who are moving in. You know why? They have no church home. It just makes sense. They have no church home. What does the Bible say about greeting? There's an entire chapter about it in Romans 16. Did Jesus greet people? Did Jesus invite people? I mean, come unto me all ye that labor and are heavy laden and I'll give you rest. He was the great inviter. Let me ask you, are we inviting people that move into our community to come to our church and to give us give us an opportunity? Are we even doing that? Do we know who they are? Do we know their addresses? Most of us don't. But what if I said tonight, I'll give you their name. I'll give you their address. In fact, I know how many people are moving in to San Angelo. I know their name and I know their address. And I guarantee if you owned a business tonight and I came up and said, I'll give you the name and address of every person moving in here, would that be worth something to you? They'd pay for it. Brother, why aren't we going to every person who moves in and saying, hey, we're the Ninth and Main Church of Christ, and we're glad you're here. Right now, I want to tell you what my wife is doing right now. My wife right now is working with your ladies, and she's going to teach your ladies how to go shopping in the name of the Lord. It's God-authorized shopping. Right now, they've never been more excited. They're going to come to the elders, and they're going to say, we're going to go God-authorized shopping. We need funds. We're going to go to the Dollar Tree, and we're going to build new mover baskets. They're $10, and we're going to put these things together, and then we're going to go to these new movers, and we're going to give them a gift, and we're going to say, welcome to the community, and we're going to let them know that we're a church that welcomes people. We care about you. We would like you to come and visit. Here's one of the rules of door knocking. You never go to the door empty-handed. You always have a gift. It's very difficult to get mad when you have a gift. How about if I knocked on the door? How about if you just moved into the area and knocked on the door and I came and I had this basket of stuff in my hand. You, sir, I said, hey, my name's Rob, my wife Nicole. We know you just moved here. We're neighbors just down the road. And hey, welcome to the community. And here's a gift my wife and I put together for you. In fact, our church kind of helps with that. And man, we just wanted to welcome you. Where are you guys from? What kind of reception am I going to get from that, Royce? What are they going to do? It's going to be good, right? It's going to be real good. But what if I did this? No gift. And I got a clipboard. And I do this. Is your name Mike Bonner? Who are you? My name is Rob, my wife. Where'd you get my name from? How'd you get that information? They immediately think you're a con artist there to rip them off. It's not going to work. Let me go back to one of my points, point three, training. If you do not train your church members what to say at the door and how to do it, it fails. So it's not good enough just to say, hey, we're going to greet new movers. If you don't know how to greet them, if you don't have a plan, if you don't know what to bring, all of this falls apart. And so at each step we're taking, we're learning. Believe you me, Walmart knows how to do it. If the world can do this, brethren, we can do this. They're taking the very biblical principles that Christ taught, and they're using it for material gain. We can take those principles and use it for spiritual benefit. And we can help people realize that we care. We want them to come and visit. This is a powerful tool. It works. I can't wait to teach you more about this. I'm going to give your elders the names tonight. I'm going to tell you exactly how many people you got right now on a list that just moved here. Every single month, I can give you a big spring. House to house, we buy the information, and it's cheap. You can't get a French fry for how much this cost. I mean, this is not about the money. This is just about the desire to do it. Companies will go to no end to get. How many of you have ever moved? Raise your hand if you've ever moved. Raise your hand. That's everybody. Okay, put your hands down. Watch this. When you guys moved and you went out to the mailbox, I don't know, 3 days later, and you opened up your mailbox, what's the first kind of literature that you get? Just start talking. What do you get in your mailbox? You get, okay, the thing from the post office. What else? What is it, Mike? Advertisement. You know who advertise? You know one of the first advertisements you're going to get when you move? Home Depot. How do they know? 10% off. Tomorrow, Lowe's, 15% off. Next day, True Value, 10%. Ace Hardware. How do they know? And why them? Same way we do it. We do the very same thing. We get the information, but we're not trying to give them 10% off. But we're trying to help them go to heaven. You got to have a robust card ministry. And we're pretty good in our churches about sending our elders and members cards. We're good at anniversary cards and birthday cards. And man, I don't want to disappoint our ladies, but let me say it among the men. Whether I get a birthday card from my brethren does not determine whether or not I show up for church. But I'm glad I get one. I want to know, are we sending the cards to the lost? Are we sending the cards to the people who got cancer on our road? Are we sending the cards to the person who just lost their father, their mother, their son, their daughter? Are we sending cards to people that are struggling and suffering at our jobs? Are we reaching out? Because I can tell you that of all the things we do, of every tool I've seen, nothing produces more contacts and Bible studies than this. Nothing. And we're talking the new movers doesn't do what this does. You got to get everybody in your church writing cards. It's got to be organized. We got to know who we're writing to. We got to fill up St. Angelo with cards. Consumer Reports put out a magazine, and the question was, this is the top-selling car lot in America every year. How does he do it? He's in the middle of the country, and they went and brought their cameras. And they asked him, how do you do it? How are you always number one? He says, follow me. And they took the cameras into the back room of this car lot, and sitting in a room were 8 older ladies. And all they did all day long was write handwritten cards. And he said, we write cards, handwritten. And they said, this is your secret. And he said, yes. He said, we write handwritten cards to people. We open the phone book, we write cards. He's the number one car salesman every single year. A personal note. Brethren, I don't have time. I literally could spend an hour tonight on this. But part of what we do in our schools, we train churches how to do this right. If you'll learn how to do this, I guarantee you're going to get Bible studies. Her name is Bettina. I want you to look at that picture right there. Look at that. Look at what's all around her desk. Cards. When my wife and I walked into her apartment, and the elders had told me, Rob, I know you've been gone for several weeks, but we got this lady, and she reached out to us, and we've been sending her cards. She's come a couple. I said, Brother Homer, I said, Rob, could you go visit her? I said, yes. So we went over to the house. I walked in, cards, I introduced myself. She's got us sitting down, and she got a little oxygen tank right there to the right. And she's just talking about her life and how she's moved here. And I see these cards everywhere. I said, Bettina, I said, man, you're a pretty popular lady. Who sent you all these cards? I never ask a question I don't know the answer to. Brethren, I know who sent the cards, but I want her to tell me. And she said, oh, that church you attend, Rob, that Jacksonville. Man, I got like 40-some cards from that church. I said, well, Bettina, I said, what do you think about the Jacksonville Church of Christ? Oh, it's a nice, I've never met a nicer group of people. I said, Bettina, do you know a lot about the Jacksonville Church? Well, really not a lot, just since I visited, you know. Bettina, would you like to know more about the Jacksonville Church? Oh, I kind of would. Good, because I just so happen to have, anybody want to help me? I just so happen to have... It's not that hard. Evangelism is not complicated. You just have to care about people. Can I tell you what happened in the third... I got to tell you guys this story. I don't always tell this, but I think this audience will appreciate this story. We're in the third Bible study. We are reading Mark 16, 16. I have never seen this before. I said, Bettina, I said, would you read Mark 16, 16? She says, oh, yes. And so she opened her Bible. Oh, Rob, my pastor told me all about this verse. I bet he has. I said, Bettina, can you just read it? Oh, she said, he that believes and is saved is baptized. Huh? And I looked, my wife looked at me. And I said, Bettina, would you read that again? Yes, Rob, he that believes is saved and then baptized. And she could tell I was confused. Rob, you got a problem here? I said, well, Bettina, I said, I picked up her Bible and I looked at it. King James. I said, put it back down. I said, Bettina, would you read it like one word at a time? Well, sure. She adjusted her glasses. He that believes and it. You ought to have seen the look on her face. But she looked at me. She said, well, that's not what my pastor told me that verse said. I said, I bet not. I got to. After she was baptized, I looked at her and I said, Bettina, I said, tell me about your history a little bit. She said, well, you know, I've gone to the Church of Christ before. I said, really? She said, but I'm a Baptist. Now, Rob, until I learn better. And then she told me. She said, Rob, I grew up a Baptist. I always went to the Baptist church. But the last town, there wasn't a church and there was a Church of Christ and I couldn't drive across the street. I walked. I said, you walked? How long do you attend this church? Oh, that's 7 years. 7 years. I said, in that 7 year period of time, Bettina, did anybody ever, I don't know, have a Bible study with you? Oh, no. I said, did 7 years. I said, so you didn't go very often, like maybe once a month or something. I'm looking for something here. Oh, no, I went every Sunday for 7 years and not one Bible study. Brethren, I just got to, how in the world can someone walk into our churches, sit in our pews for 7 years, and no one does a Bible study? 6 months later, I'm on my way back from Texas, and I got a phone call from Rebecca Pearson. She's a nurse. She would see and check on Bettina. Rob, I'm at the house right now. Her oxygen is empty, Rob. Rob, she's blue. Rob, she will not make it. Thank God she still wasn't at that church. She would have been lost. When the Church of Christ does not do her job, people are lost. When we shut our doors, people are lost. San Angelo depends on this church doing their job. When we don't do our job, people go to hell, brothers. God is depending on us. I'm going to wrap this up. I've got so much more I want to give you, but I've got to focus on this. I'm going to ask a question. I want this interactive. Brethren, what's the typical thing we do when a visitor walks in the door? How do we get their contact information? Tell me, how do we do that typically? Visitors' cards. Do they fill them out? Not sometimes. Occasionally. Do the members fill out the cards? We've given up on that a long time ago. When a visitor walks in the door, is that a contact? Not unless you get the contact information. It's not. How about they walk in the door and walk out, and you don't know where they live? You don't even know their name. How do we make sure that the most fruitful contacts in the world, which are visitors, because they are baptized at the highest rate, how do we make sure that we never lose another one? Right now, my wife is teaching your ladies how to go shopping in the name of the Lord again. And we make visitor bags. And they're very, very, unique to each church. Sometimes ladies will put special little, things inside they've knitted. Sometimes breath mints and cups and pens and paper and tissues and sanitizer. And we've got all that and we give it to them. I just want to demonstrate. If you're a visitor, let me demonstrate what we teach. So he walks in. The first thing I want him to do is to do what he wants to do. And who knows what he wants to do? He's just walked in the church building. What does he want? He wants to sit down. That's the number one thing a visitor wants, is to sit down. So we're going to have some door greeters that welcome him. All their job is just to make him a friendly first impression. Do not accost him. Don't interrogate him. Do not surround him. Just be, hey, we're glad you're here. My name's Doug, and hey, our auditorium's right through those doors. And just be. Now, we've got pew greeters, specially trained. A pew greeter is specially trained on what to do. I'm going to sit either on the front or the back. I will not sit with you. It makes you uncomfortable. You don't know me. I'm in your space. So I'm going to sit like right here. I'm going to turn over my shoulder. Hey, my name's Rob. What's your name? Hey, Tobias, you visiting this morning? Where are you from, Tobias? Columbus. You just moved here to San Angelo? Oh, wow, man. How far you live away? No, in San Angelo. Okay, 5 minutes. All right, 5 minutes. All right, and we're just going to start talking. Hey, okay, man, Tobias, this church loves visitors. I got a gift for you. So I'm going to go get the visitor bag. I'm going to grab it. I'm going to give it to Tobias. Now, there's a reason for this, because I want something. There's something I need from Tobias, but I want him to know I'm genuine. I care. So I'm going to give him a gift. You always give a gift. I give him the gift. Hey, Tobias, we're card sending church. We love to send cards to visitors. Can I get your name and address? Guess who's going to fill out the card? That's right. Does he want to fill a card out? No, he does not. I'm going to fill out the card. Now, let me ask this question. What do you think your rate of success will be if you did it like that? It's almost 100%. It's almost 100% of the time I get that information. What if you just did this? If this was your strategy, which is most churches, there are visitors among us this morning. We want to welcome you, and we got a card in the pew back in front of you. If you'll fill that out and put that in the collection plate, or the young men will pick it up as they go down the aisle. It's not hard. Brethren, we need people that will get to know Tobias. After the service, by the way, I'm going to tell, hey, Tobias, did you like the service today? Hey, what'd you like about it? I'm just going to interact. Tobias, my family has a little custom. We always invite visitors out to eat. What's your favorite food? What do you like? Soul food. All right. Well, there's a soul food place right down here. And would you be my guest? I'd love to take you. That's all I'm going to do right there. I'm going to make contact. I'm going to get to know Tobias. That's going to be very intentional. I guarantee you, Mike, if you get up here in the pulpit and say, now I want everybody to be nice to visitors, that's not enough. Man, it's just not enough. We want to make sure everybody gets contact. It's not enough. You're going to have to train your members. In fact, I'm just going to be honest. There are some members of this church, you don't want them greeting visitors. Brother, it's just not who you want. Gabby Gossip doesn't need to be greeting visitors. And Angry Fred, let's put him in the closet. Let's not let Angry Fred be our first face at the door. I mean, we all have different functions. Not everybody's, has that personality that just, is so easy to talk to. And some of us are a little abrasive. The abrasive ones won't be on the visitor team. Maybe you'll be in another team. But we're going to recognize that we have different talents. It's okay. I'm not speaking down to you if you're not that bubbly personality. It's all right. But we've got to identify who those people are. We've got to train them what to say and what to do. Brethren, if we allow visitors to walk into our church and leave, and we don't get the contact information, we should be fired. That should never happen in our churches. but it is the norm. Brethren, I could tell you story after story about my wife and family and I traveling. And I'm going to pop in tomorrow night, Mike, somewhere. I won't make it home. I don't know where. I don't want to know where. Because I'm going to test them. I am. I'm not going to be in my suit and tie. I'm going to be in tribal clothes. I'm going to walk into that church and I'm going to see what happens. Brethren, if I told you right now the name of churches and how we've been treated when I walk in and walk out, I can't do it. I just can't tell you. You would be shocked. There isn't a business in America that would allow that to happen, or they go bankrupt. I've got so much to tell you, and I just wanted to give you a taste tonight of what evangelism looks like. Brethren, we have everything it takes to grow. This isn't rocket science. You don't have to be a theologian. In fact, it's probably better that you weren't. You just have to love people. And what we want to do in our school is help you develop each one of these skill sets. And you can help us. And you can help every church of Christ in America. Because when you find what works, tell us. And let's let every church know. No one has a copyright on this. This is about how do we reach people in our neighborhoods, in our community. It's got to be focused, intentional, training, equip them. If we do those things, brother, I promise you, I don't know a church out there that's not growing. It is. But you won't grow accidentally. Every church of Christ that grows, there's a reason behind it. The right type of growth, there's a reason. I want to end with just one slide. I want to pick through these real quick. It's one thing I want to show you. In Ephesians chapter 3, verses 9 and 10, Paul says something very important about the church. He says, to this intent, that now unto principalities and powers in heavenly places, that it might be made known by the church the manifold wisdom of God, which is according to his eternal purpose, which he purposed in Christ Jesus our Lord. What is the purpose of the church? Why are we here? Brother, we are not the Lions Club. This isn't the Rotary Club. Brother, you have one reason for being here. There's one reason God made the church of Christ. Listen to it. To make known to the world the manifold wisdom of God. The purpose of the church is to seek and save the lost. You are not a country club. Everything we do in our churches, everything revolves around that purpose. And if it doesn't, shut it down. Just shut it down until you can make sure it's about the purpose. When a business forgets their purpose, they go bankrupt. When a church doesn't know their purpose, they're not a church. Thank you for your kind attention tonight, gentlemen. And it's been a great week. I'm going to spend some time with your elders tonight and maybe a few others. And I gave you the 10,000-foot view. I'm going to give them the 10-foot view. And I love it. Step by step. And for those of you who are not members here, I hope you'll to contact us. We have a step-by-step guide. So much more. Everything I've talked about. But we're going to train along the way. We're going to provide tools along the way. And it's going to take time. But you can develop in your pews every one of these and so much more. And I'll guarantee that if you'll focus on evangelism, it'll solve almost every problem your church has. It's hard. It's hard to have problems when you're evangelizing. Give the members a job. To God be the glory, church. Let's pray. Father, we're thankful for the men that are here tonight. And Father, equip us like men. Father, may we have courage to stand in the gap and not only to lead our homes, but leaders in the church. Father, there's a war for the souls of men and women all around us. Battles raging. Some of us are slumbering. Awake thou that sleepest and arise. And Father, let's evangelize. Thank thee for the tool of Scripture. Help us, Father, to use thy word and to take the example of Jesus. And Father, we pray that that example would be the cross before us. That we would do what Jesus did. We'd love people. We'd show that concern and compassion. And Father, that we teach them. We love them enough, Father, to sit down with them and show them the way to the cross. Bless the Ninth and Main Church of Christ, our elders, our preacher, and every member. And Father, it is our fervent prayer as we've come to a dawn of another day that our hearts and ears and our eyes, that we would see a day where the Church of Christ grows again in America. As in around the world, we pray, Father, for the church. She is the bride of thy Son. And oh, how we love her. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.